coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello, everybody. How are you tonight? Welcome. Man, what an evening. We have Hakeem Isler on tonight. He is formerly from such shows as Naked and Afraid. He is a certified ninja, quite literally. We will be getting into that. We will be getting into some of what it takes to do such things in the world, some of the actual skills behind that, but more than that, we will be getting into the Psy Games. He has created the Psy Games, which is an incredible event that is out there to help people compete in the world of being psychic, and the world of being clairvoyant, and the world of remote viewing. So we're going to be getting into some of that tonight, a little bit of Psy Games action, that kind of stuff. In addition, we will also be in the second part after our commercial break talking with Earl Grey about the recent docuseries on Netflix, The Manhattan Alien Abduction, and its impact on the community. It is quite literally what I would consider to be a hit piece. It's done in very, very pointed fashion towards some of the work of Bud Hopkins. Not really a fan of that. So we're going to be talking about the idea of these divisive documentaries, the idea of bringing people in under guise of talking about fact and making something represent something else. There are active lawsuits pending for that documentary as we speak. So we'll be getting into some of that, what the impact is on the abductee and experiencer community, and how that affects the cause of disclosure in the ultimate ways when we're literally on the eve of the election right now. So in our first segment, we have with us Hakeem Isler. Hakeem is a renowned expert in holistic health and conscious work, deeply committed to integrating these practices into his survival training. He is six credits away from completing his bachelor's degree in integrative health medicine with a focus on herbal medicine, and he is a dedicated student of yoga therapy. Excuse me, folks. Hakeem has gained national recognition through his appearances on television shows such as Discovery Channel's Naked and Afraid, Naked and Afraid XL, and First Man Out, The Kelly Clarkson Show, Fox's Kicking and Screaming, and MTP's Couples Retreat. He's also a certified close protection specialist, inventor, and published author of 5 books, and once again, the founder of Psy Games. You can find out more about this amazing event at PsyGamesInternational.com. Welcome to the show tonight in our first segment. Hakeem Isler, how are you doing today?
Hello, everyone. It is Hakeem Isler. So glad to virtually meet you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you being here tonight. We had a chance to chat in a Zoom meeting the other day. And it was amazing talking with you, and actually amazing talking about this event. During our pre-show discussion, we revealed to each other that we'd actually met previously at the IRVA conference in Menlo Park a couple of years ago. And it's great to see that within that short span of time that you have put together this amazing event in this community, Hakeem. Before we get into that, because I think it's very interesting, number one, that you are a registered ninja. As I was telling you before the show, I myself am a huge fan of the work of Stephen Hayes and breeding ninjutsu over to the West, and especially some of the principles, some of the first things that I would ever consider connected to remote viewing came from my reading of Stephen Hayes' work. And the ideas of the ninja's idea of invisibility and things like that. The idea of being able to tap into your opponent's mind to make yourself invisible, that kind of stuff. It was absolutely fascinating to me. And I mean, I was reading that in like seventh grade, you know? So how did you first come to the world of ninjutsu and this world of psychic work in this kind of way, Hakeem?
So I think the fact that you put psychic work and ninjutsu in that same question is very important, because that is how it happened, really. They say, or it's people have said, and now that I'm doing more research with children and their abilities as young folks to really tap into our multidimensional nature, that kids kind of know what they're going to be and how their world is going to shape. And we kind of forget over time, because we have a world that kind of dictates we should do this or it should do that, or a family. And we kind of lose that curiosity and that awareness that we have when we're these light, bright, unfiltered beings of potential when we come into the world.
Yeah.
So I say all of that one day my mom and my aunt were in the kitchen and I'm playing around. I'm 9 years old and my mom looks at me and she says, "Hakeem, what are you going to be when you grow up?" And she says, without hesitation, I look at her with a big smile on my face and I say, "I'm going to be a ninja."
Right.
So she and my aunt kind of look at each other and they laugh a little bit. And she said she didn't know how to tell me, and she never wanted to shoot down my ideas. So she didn't know how to tell me, like, "Hey, that's not like a thing. You can't be that. That's something made up. It's something on television." So then you fast forward many, many years. I'm 20 and I had a friend who unfortunately got into some hard circumstances and murdered somebody. And
oh my.
He was like my kindred spirit, like as a brother, you know, like I had a young brother, but this guy was like, he and I matched. We were the same age. And so when he did that, it really changed my perspective on life. And I was just like, man, if he's capable of doing that, what am I? I could do that. You know, maybe I'm capable of doing that. And it really made me question everything. And I came up with this idea that I needed to get out of Jersey. And I was like, I need to change my environment, be somewhere new. And that led me to think about, what am I good at? Well, I've been doing martial arts since I was 8 years old. So I was good at that. And I had been doing music, and I was like, I could do music anywhere, but what martial arts do I want to do? Through some really auspicious circumstances, I ended up meeting a friend that I hadn't seen in years, told him what was going on. And he was like, "Hey, you should check out the ninja." And I was like, "There's no such thing as ninja. I mean, I've been doing this martial arts thing for a while. The ninja, that's a ninjutsu. That's like movies." That's a myth. He was like, "No, there's a real guy and there's real people training." I went to the library and the only book that they had was one of Hayes's books, and it was Ninja and Their Secret Fighting Art. And I read that book and I fell in love. It had everything. It was adaptive and it was cerebral and it was about spirituality and connection with nature and all this stuff. And I was just blown away. And so I went home, I looked my mom in the eye, I said, "I'm going to go and visit this ninja guy and see if I can become a student of his." And she was like, "What?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm going to go and do this." And she said, "You knew when you were 9, you told me this is what you were going to be." And I thought, there's no such thing. She was like, "This is crazy. I don't know what to say." So I went, stayed there 2 weeks, fell in love with it. It was everything I wanted, came back, told her I was going to move. And this was my first time living on my own. I had no money. I spent the next several months saving up $1,200. And that's what I moved to Ohio with.
You remember when you could move for $1,200?
Right.
Wow.
And I had this crazy, crappy $250 apartment in the slum of Dayton, Ohio. And that's what I did. And everything that I am today, including the Psy games, has been a product of that one choice.
That is an absolutely incredible story, Hakeem. And did you actively meet and study with Stephen Hayes?
Yes, I've been a student of his for 24 years.
Wow.
And so here's how it comes full circle. I'm still training with him, but what was it? A year ago, just over a year ago.
I just got goosebumps, man.
As a grown man, after 20-something years of training with him, I stood in his home dojo, me and 14 other people. And I got to change he has this thing called Wall of Intentions, which sticks with your name on it. And personal students of his are up there. And it's only a few of us. And I stood right next to him as he surprised me with my 6th degree black belt. And I took my intention stick off of his wall, off the wall where I was a 5th degree. And I moved it to the 6th degree area where it sits to this day with only 4 other people.
Wow.
So now I have become his personal student. I'm on his wall in his home dojo as one of 4 people in a 6th degree black belt.
Wow.
You know, level.
Congratulations.
Under him currently that's actively training. I mean, there are other 6 degrees out there, but I'm one that's actively training and I'm his personal student and I'm on his wall as his personal student. So it's weird that a 9-year-old says, I'm going to be a ninja.
Yeah.
Then at 20, refines that passion, goes and discovers it and actually trains in it. And then at 47, stands in the home of the guy who he went to seek out those many years ago, putting his intention stick in that spot as a 6th degree with 4 of the individuals next to him.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That is an incredible story, man. just a manifestation to begin with.
Yes.
And I mean, I remember once again, I was probably about 7th or 8th grade when I wanted to travel to Japan to study it. And then I found out about, you know, Stephen Hayes, and it was like, oh, maybe someday. I ended up entering the seminary instead. So I guess there was some kind of ninjutsu involved, just in a different spiritual way, you know?
Yes.
But how did that lead to the world of remote viewing? At what point did you start studying the discipline of remote viewing, Hakeem?
So all of this comes about from this ninja training. And so Hayes would talk when we would do trainings on Nakuji. And Nakuji are these powers and abilities that the ninja would have. And there are 9 of them. And each one is an expression of a different type of ability or skill that's inherent in us as human beings and multidimensional beings. And he would go to like one of the Kuji, like Kuji 7. And he would start talking about this ability to see things in a different time and place, right?
Mm.
And he said that at one point he was approached, especially by many of the government agencies, especially when he first came back from Japan. He was the only ninja that people had ever heard of that was an American that went and learned with this Japanese grandmaster and brought this information back. He was single-handedly responsible for the ninja boom. So he talked about these kuji, and he talked about this kuji where you could see things in a different time and place. And he said, oh, there was a time that the government was highly interested in this. And there was a guy named Dale Graff who came to me because my teacher was in Centerville, Ohio. Dale Graff was at Wright Force Air Force Base, which is in Ohio as well. Yeah. And he basically approached Hayes and was like, hey, we would like to see how you do with this remote viewing thing. And Hayes was like, well, that's a part of what we study in our training, and I would love to do it. And he had this, he had this experience. So he would often talk about that experience with us and show us some of the things that he did. But I was still too young and all about the physicality back then. And recently, over the about 4 or 5 years ago, I started having encounters with young students of mine. For me to get my 5th degree black belt, I had to do a sword test where you do all of this stuff and you fight all of these people in this free response thing. And then at some point, when you get done with that, your teacher appears behind you with a sword and tries to cut you down, my teacher Hayes, and you have to just feel it and know it and move out of the way without being able to see it, right?
Yeah.
The first few times I failed, and they said, no, you're too athletic, you're doing all of this stuff, you're throwing people around with your muscles, you're moving fast. And they said, no, you just need to feel what's happening. You need to understand the intent, know when threats are coming, and just move out of the way. And that was like this wizard realm of magic. I was just like, what are you talking about? You know? And the day I passed, all I remember is that they said, go. And a bunch of people started trying to attack me. And then they said, stop. And I don't remember what I did. And then all of a sudden, I just felt this instinct to move out of the way. And I moved out of the way, and my teacher had just swung this sword at my head from behind, and I just stepped out of the way of it. And everybody was cheering me on. And I said, what was that? You know, what just happened? How the hell did I know this thing was about to chop me in half? And I move out of the way. What is happening here? And I didn't have an answer. And people said, well, this is what's happening. You're tuned, you're tapped in. And I was like, I need to figure out more of that, because that tapped me into something that's deeper in my essence. And I want to know what that is.
Yeah.
And beyond that, after that whole experience, nobody was really able to give me any deep understanding other than my teacher, Hayes. But it was, well, how do we get other people to explore this? This could be very valuable to people's lives.
Yeah.
And the answer is train for a really long time in these practices and you'll get there. And I was like, well, what about the next generation? I'm seeing these kids growing up and they're doing like Naruto hand kuji and things of that nature. And they know all the words of how to, you know, breathe fire. Like they're one of the characters on this animation, you know, cartoon. And when I would say, hey, do you know there are abilities like that humans have, and we actually have it in our martial arts? They'd say, oh yeah, we know that there's there, but how can I do it?
Yeah.
And the only answer I had was, well, trained for 20 something years like I did, and then maybe you'll have an experience and then you'll know for sure that this is a real thing, you know? And kids are like, what? I'm not training for no 20 years to just be able to maybe dodge a sword. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I need to know now. That put me on a quest to kind of find protocols that I can teach young folks, and they would be able to have a real experience with that ability that's inherent in them right then, before the world can talk them out of the truth of who they are, you know?
Yeah.
And make them, I mean, logic is great. We need logic. It's gotten us far, but it is not, it's only half of the equation of the grandness of who we are as multidimensional beings that are tapped into source.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It is only a fraction of what we can be capable of. So my goal from that point on, after having that experience as an adult with my teacher, saying, how can I get children to have this experience as children? Because it could be very valuable to their life to be able to help them make better decisions, really fulfill, live really fulfilled, happy lives, and then grow up into these beings that we can't even imagine. Beings that haven't been talked out of their gifts. A lot of us are finding this way late in the game.
Yeah.
You know, we're finding this in 30, 40, 50, 60. Oh, wait a minute. We can see things in another time and place. Man, what if we found that when we were 8 and somebody actually encouraged it and somebody actually helped grow it, and they didn't make you feel crazy or, you know, weird because you had this and you actually were around other people who had these abilities and they also were doing this. So I created the Side Games is to make it a platform for people to find others who are willing to explore this in a way that's fun. It's competitive, but it's also collaborative. So now you have people meeting people from different places who are doing the same thing, where you don't have to feel alone, where you don't have to feel weird. You are a part of a collective. You're able to see that and feel that all around you in this space that's supportive, that has researchers there who are going to be also helping to guide and grow us in these different ways. That's why this all started. And that was all because of ninjutsu. I'm sorry, I kind of went off on a tangent, but you could tell.
You answered every bit of it, man. And I'm passionate about it too. Like, we literally sat out talking to like wee hours of the morning every night, as passionate as we were whenever we met in Menlo. And, you know, it's great to see people passionate about this. And that's what's awesome, especially passionate about bringing as we mentioned in our conversation a few days ago, the idea of how do you bring this concept to a new generation, you know? Yes. And I kind of jokingly said in my talk on the remote viewing cruise, that, you know, you turn it into an app and you give it rules, you know. Yes. You turn it into a game and you give it rules. That's how you attract young kids. You know, that's how you attract 20-year-olds, things like that. So the fact that, yes, you have created the Psy Games and you've given it rules and you've given them a means by which not only to have healthy competition with each other, but healthy interaction with each other within a community, you know, and to, like, as a Magic the Gathering player, as a Dungeons and Dragons player back in the day, things like that. Like, that's what it was about. It was about getting together with my friends and doing that. You know, and unfortunately, so much of this work, be it in the world of parapsychological research, be it in the world of, you know, UFO, UAP, what have you, it happens in a vacuum, Hakeem, and it can't anymore.
Yes.
Not at the rate at which science is coming to meet these fields. You know, it can't happen in a vacuum. It's one of those. I think that there's a lot of reticent fear on behalf of some researchers and even on the behalf of some remote viewers, you know, and I get that because I've just started my remote viewing journey. Even on the cruise was like my ninth session of remote viewing. You know, probably my third or fourth to be monitored with. And hi, Tomi, my monitor, she's watching. But
hey, Tomi.
but in all sincerity, it's one of those, like, the want to do it alone and not to share results and not to be and not to have results challenged is so big. So big.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. So I have a statement based on something you said. Could Please. You imagine when you were a kid playing Dungeons and Dragons, if you had the wizard or any of those folks that had those abilities and somebody came along and said, "Hey kid, I know you really love playing this. Let me give you a game where you can actually learn the protocols or the knowledge and skill set to actually be the wizard," you know, you know, like, kids would have ate that up. They would have been all over it. And then it made it fun. Are you kidding me? And then the hours that kids spent on playing Dungeons and Dragons, which was fun, but didn't actually grow them as these supernatural or hypernatural beings, right? Or the next level, multidimensional beings, grow their multidimensional nature. Imagine if you gave them that tool back then, and instead of spending 10 hours playing Dungeons and Dragons, they spent 10 hours actually playing these Psy games and growing in those abilities. Where would we be? We'd be on a whole nother level.
You'd be playing Dungeons and Dragons with each other without Zoom.
Yes.
You know?
We wouldn't have cell phones because we'd be That's communicating right. telepathically.
That's
we'd
right.
be so far along. And we say, you know, I mean, we're bouncing all around here, so I'm just That's going okay. with the flow. But I mean, like, this idea that, you know, there are these interdimensional beings out there, and we're like, whoa, we're waiting for the government to tell us, yes, there are. Well, first off, most of us are, anyone who's kind of believing in this stuff, pretty much says, yes, they are interdimensional beings. And if you've done remote viewing long enough, you probably had an encounter with something that you're just like, I can't explain that. And that was intense. So what are we really doing?
Yeah.
To be on a matter of fact, if let's say a chimpanzee wants to communicate with me and it's in Africa, it needs to learn how to use a cell phone. Cause I ain't going to Africa just to talk to some chimpanzee. Right. Yeah. So if we are on this different level than a alien, you know, or interdimensional being, then if they might be willing to talk to us, but unless we can communicate with them and reach out to them and know how to do that and put in the work to do that, we're not going to be on the level to be able to talk to. We're always going to have these passing by moments where it's like, oh, I saw this being and I don't know how to communicate with it on a regular basis. Well, what if we had trained in these skills and these abilities and grew these skills and these abilities, and we found ourselves being able to reach out at will, you know, and able to use these tools as a means to make us greater, take us to our greater potential and make us higher level beings. Man, we would be amazing, and we are amazing. And so we just need to step into, our amazement to the next level. We really need to start doing that. And how do you do that? One of the ways you do that is you get competitive. Yeah. You play. We saw that with the 4-minute mile. People said that was impossible. You can't run 4-minute mile. Are you kidding me? And this guy did it. And then people still, you still had the naysayers. Nah, it can't be done. It can't be done. And then 10 years later, another guy did it. And once that second person did it, then every year after that, like, somebody beat it. And now the 4-minute mile, we clearly know is beatable. And we're actually, I think, down to 3 minutes and 50 seconds or something like that. Yeah. So we shaved off 10 seconds on something that was supposedly impossible. Yep. And that was done through finding the standard. Who is the standard? The standard is, you know, this person on remote viewing.
Yeah.
Okay. If they're the standard and they do it better than anybody else, then the next people we know either have to meet or exceed that standard. So they come in and they practice. And then one day they break through and they exceed the standard. And that's the new standard. And then people practice. And then they beat that standard and that becomes the new standard. And that's how we evolve. But people in their small little community and areas and, you know, at this facility or in this basement or over here, that's all great and dandy. They're doing great stuff.
Yeah.
But they're not pushing each other. They don't know what the standards are because they're in their small little group of 4 people, 5 people, 100 people. No, we need to bring this to the world stage and do it in a fun way and make it collaborative. Well, and now we're going to start to push each other and usher a new age of people really being able to grow into their full potential.
Well, and you know, especially when you come to the point of play, Hakim, that you're talking about, the idea that, you know, there's a difference between, for instance, a day in the dojo where you are running through katas and form, and a day in the dojo where you're sparring.
Yeah.
And you're having both a full-on learning situation, you know. You're going to learn a lot sparring, but you're also going to have a little bit more fun.
Yes.
You know, while you do it. And the idea of that, the idea of what you both mutually learn as fighters, what you both mutually learn in that agreed upon combat, you know, the agreed upon combat with rules.
Yeah. Like,
these are the rules. You ain't just getting in there and meleeing each other on the mat for 20 minutes. There are rules to this, you know, and that's just it. The idea of being able to even with some older hat and older community remote viewers, being able to pull them out of the, because some forms of remote viewing are specifically rigid. You know, when you get into controlled remote viewing, things like that, there are some very rigid parts to that as far as protocol and when things are written down and how they're written down and that kind of stuff, as opposed to other forms and even just straight clairvoyant viewing, you know. So the idea of being able to expose younger people to the idea of remote viewing without the fear of the protocol and without the hard laboratory aspect of the protocol, you know, which for some people can drain the fun out of it for certain. And at the same time, bringing those that are used to that kind of protocol to the world of a different experience with remote viewing, you know, and challenging themselves in a new and different way.
Yeah, that is it. You're right. You're hitting all of the right buttons when you're talking about this. And that really is the key is, you know, we want a stage for, you know, on the side games, there's going to be two categories. There's going to be an adult or two divisions. There's going to be an adult division and a youth division. The youth division is ages seven to 14 or 15. Cool. And then you have the adult division, which is young adults and adults. And so you can have a young adult on a team with an adult. And that starts at about 16, 17. So and all the way up until 55, 60. So this way, you know, there's room for everybody. And then we're able to have people, you know, really partake in this. And it's a team event. So, you know, it's going to be five, we're going to select five teams of five. Everyone can apply as a team and we will assess you and then we'll assess your team just to make sure that you have some abilities and that you're not just saying, hey, I just want to, you know, come on here because we want to foster good quality competition and we want to make sure that people do have some skills and they have been training and practicing on their own. We don't care how they came about those skills. We just want to know that they got them so that we're also not setting them up for failure. Now, all of a sudden they find themselves on stage in front of a bunch of people and they never really actually did remote viewing or psychokinesis or precognition, right?
Yeah.
So, and on the website coming here shortly, not only will we have a list of the actual games, but we're also going to have some practice require or practice suggestions for you to get even better between now and when we have the actual first one in August.
Nice.
So going back to teams, so it is five teams of five in each division. And what will happen is the team will select who is going to compete in that particular on that particular topic. So if it's remote viewing and I say, hey, Chris, every time we do remote viewing, man, you knock it out the park. You are the remote viewing guru. We want you to actually compete as a part of our team, but you will be the person who competes in the remote viewing game.
Yeah. Academic game style, you know, where it's like, oh, Jenny over here is our chemistry person. It's science time. Bring her up.
Yep. Yep. And then somebody from the team will compete in MindSight. Somebody from the team will compete in dowsing and we will all get points based on how we perform in that event or series of events underneath that genre. And then our team will tally up all those points, or the judges will tally up all those points for that team. And whoever has the most points, just pretty much like the election, right? So like whoever has the most points, they win, you know, whatever team has the most points, it wins based on all of the different performances. So it puts a little bit of, it's a group decision to choose who is going to compete. And then they take it to the world stage and then we have a lot of fun with it. And then we see who does the best and who could do better. And then hopefully if a person doesn't perform as well as they like to, then they go home and they train and practice and they get a better shot next year.
Yeah.
And then, and that's what fosters growth is that maybe sometimes we succeed. Maybe sometimes we don't succeed. We have a good time. We go home and we train and then we come back and try again. And that not only builds grit and strong human beings, it builds disciplined human beings and it also builds very highly skilled human beings.
Yeah.
And when I say human beings, I'm talking about who we really are, beings, you know, like beings with multi dimensions and beings with multi abilities and bringing that to the forefront.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And, you know, it really is a fully rounded event, and much more, I think, almost like a retreat in and of itself, for the fact that you have speakers, for the fact that you have activities related to that, for the fact that you have team activities involved with that. It's something different than an average conference, or even than just an average competition, I think.
Yeah.
Because of the marriage of the two, and the idea of, like, you can go and hear some amazing speakers talk about the exact skills that you're there to compete in, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yes. And that's exactly what I want. You know, I really want to get that moving in that direction. So if you are a person who's sitting at home, you may have read about remote viewing, or you may have heard about some of these skills and you're just really not sure where to go to get it, then this would be a conference for you to come to, because we're going to have Friday is all lectures and classes. So we're going to have some of the most professional people, high level professionals in these fields, who are going to be there speaking, lecturing, and workshopping. So you can actually take one of their classes and learn how to do certain things like spoon bending, or learn how to do the basic foundations of remote viewing or mindset and these type of qualities. So if you have no experience, or just a little experience, but you want to learn more, then this would be the event to go to. Then we have Saturday and Sunday, which is actual game days, where you get to now, first you get to experience it. Secondly, you get to then see people perform it at a high level under pressure in a group environment, you know?
Wow.
And that will show you, not only can you be good at this, but you can be great. You have such abilities, such gifts. And look at these people, young and older, together on the same stage, pushing each other to be better, to grow in a collaborative effort. I see people leaving this event and not being enemies. I see them going home and saying, hey, you know what, Chris, you were working for the other team, but next year, buddy, I'm going to get you. You beat me this year on remote viewing. And then maybe even we get on a Zoom and practice together and train together.
Yeah.
You know, like I see such amazing things happening in my mind's eye that come out of this,
that
is going to help bring people together around our true nature. Our pure nature.
That is the truly exciting part that I see, is the community building aspect of these games and of the competition itself, because that really is we've been in the trenches together building community aspect. And it is what is necessary to take all of this research to the next level and to the next generation, is the idea of community, the idea of it is not locked away in the filing cabinets of a few key practitioners, you know, that it is made accessible to people, that people who are new to it are encouraged to not only participate, but to compete, you know. They are made to feel welcome, that they are made to feel as though they are a part of this exact same community, you know?
Yes.
And it's so entirely key to moving this cause forward in so many different ways.
Yes. Yes. You know that. So here's another thing that inspired me when I was, this idea was kind of being birthed in my mind, in my mind's eye, was I was listening to a podcast by Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp. They have a podcast.
Yeah.
And they had the two guys on there that wrote the book Skinwalkers at the Pentagon. And Jeremy Corbell was the guy was talking about what we know, interdimensional beings, UAPs, blah, blah, blah. And Jeremy Corbell said, man, you're talking about some really interesting far out things. I mean, beings that can come and go, that can shift through time and space and communicate without words and do all this stuff. He said, isn't that scary? And I hope one day I meet this guy, because it was just amazing. He said, oh, no, I don't see anything scary at all about this. He said, I can only, he was limited to what he could say because he used to work for the DIA and now, you know, he's still under certain constraints. So he said, all I can say is that if we as human beings could reach our full potential, we would realize we have nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, if I'm playing a basketball game and you choose Michael Jordan on your team, and I know I'm not playing at Michael Jordan level, that's scary as hell. Yeah. Right? I'm like, we're about to lose because Michael is going to be shooting and dribbling and slamming all over us because I have no skills. But if I start playing at Larry Bird or not Larry Bird, like Magic Johnson level, or, you know, one of these guys who are great competitors for him, now it's a different story. It's not scary at all. Oh, yeah, Michael's good, but he's not way better than I am. It's a skill set I share. Let's go out there and have fun.
Yeah.
It becomes more fun and more exciting than if I have no skills and I don't know how this person does it. That really inspired me to start saying, well, how do we do this? I have all these kids that I train at my martial arts schools and I'm watching them come up and I'm like, man, these kids got some great potential. How do I get that generation to really embrace this so that they can grow into the generation that changes things for us?
Yeah.
That is no longer afraid, but embraces not only who we are as multidimensional being, but we embrace the broader spectrum of interdimensional beings because we ourselves realize that we are interdimensional, that we are more than 3D. We are more than 4D. We're like 5D, man. We're on a whole nother level if we can really tap into this.
Yep.
And so how do we get people to really explore that? And start at a young age. You know, the older ones are doing it. We have people, you know, when we go to these different conferences, you see people in their 50s, you see people in their 60s, you see people in their late 40s. What we really need to do is also have people who are young little people, you know, who are 6 and 7 and 8, 9 and 10, because they are going to be the next wave. And if we can get them early to spend the next 30 years training and working and developing this, these abilities in a supportive community, that's how we change the world and the future, you know, for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because we've got to get people to understand that we are all connected in a different way because we're connected, not just to each other, but we're connected to the whole universe.
Yes.
We are intrinsically tied to that through vibration. You know, we're only held together by a quantum field. Aside from that, our electron shell is massive. It's huge.
Yes.
You know, yes. So yeah, the idea of 90% empty space really kind of leaves one to wonder, you know?
Yes.
And just goes to show a whole lot, especially as we talk about on the show all the time, the idea of quantum entanglement winning the Nobel Peace Prize 2 years ago just speaks volumes to the point of this connection and to the idea that we can be connected to something via distance. That, you know, to loop this conversation right back to the beginning with about 15 minutes left, Hakeem, we can use the ninjutsu principle of being able to see something at a distance through space and time.
Yes. Yes. That is it. And I mean, and the reason I chose these games is because a lot of these different skills are interrelated, you know? And so, you know, we find sometimes doing remote viewing that we see things that happen in the past or in the future that haven't happened yet, you know? Yeah. We find that sometimes using a remote viewing like skill or a mindset like skill, then it ends up actually being like a remote viewing type skill. We might be trying to look at something locally and we look at something non-locally, or we might be trying to look at something non-local and then pick up on something local.
Yep.
And so, you know, our, that mechanism, or, you know, is, it flips back and forth. And so the more time we spend actually trying to develop that.
Yeah.
As a community, the better that's going to be.
Yes.
And this isn't, and for anyone listening, because we haven't said it a lot, they know you and you're a researcher, but this isn't a we don't want research type thing. Like we're just trying to bring fun to the research. And that might be the missing link, is that if you surround people with white cloaks in a room somewhere, not that that's really what it happens, but you know, when you're setting up a research, you know, assignment, or you're setting up some sort of research experiment, you know, there's a lot of controls, and, you know, and then you, if you're a researcher, you're probably not out there mingling with all of the fun people who are looking to have fun. So when you put out a call for people for your, you're not going to get the young and the youthful who are just doing this for fun. You're going to get people who value trying to put some research behind it. And that makes it a very serious thing.
Yeah.
And so that seriousness can damper and hamper the ability of that research to actually get the performance. So when you have fun, people do magical things. When you start saying, hey, let's put all these parameters on it, then it becomes a little bit, and put it in a lab, it becomes a little bit more challenging. What if we bring the lab to the world stage? What if a researcher meets somebody out in the fun zone and says, hey, and they make a connection, and then they get together at some time and then have some research? That's probably going to have a lot better results, because now I know you, I feel comfortable with you.
Yep.
You know, I can do it. You're supportive. We're having fun. Then we go back, we put on some parameters, and then we go there. And that was another thing. The games are set up so that, and we have high professionals in the field that are helping us make sure that the games can't be cheated, or that we minimize the potential for it to be cheated, that these games, they stand up to a certain level of scrutiny and rigor by a researcher.
Yep.
I have an illusionist on the executive team. You might see him down there. His name is Chris Ramsey.
Yeah.
He is a world famous illusionist and magician, as well as escape artist guy. And he is going to help us make sure that, that we understand, like, how could an illusionist beat this? Yeah. You know, how could an illusionist jump in and, like,
A mentalist do this?
Yes, exactly. So that we try to keep the games as true as possible. There are really quality people involved in this. This isn't like, I just got some people off Indeed, you know.
It really does kind of game the laboratory side of it, because most of these, I'm sure, are going to be based off of some sort of experiment that has been done at some point. And if not, the results of them will still be recorded, and it can lead to experiment from there. You know, it may very well be the fact that many of the people that do laboratory research into this find new and interesting ways to bring this into the laboratory.
And it gives them a pool of people to ask if they want to do.
That's
like
right.
Now you're sitting in a group of, you know, 25 people who are actually competing. And instead of you having to put a call out and find a person here or there that might have some skills and then put them to the test, no, you have a plethora of people who might be interested in actually, you know, helping with your research. So you have a stage, a community where you can go, where people are actually putting in the work to get better at these skills for fun, that you can then ask, can these people come back to your research facility and do some research with you?
Yeah.
That's way better than like randomly putting some call out there to some group, you know, where, you know, somebody may have found remote viewing like 5 years ago, and, you know, what, you know, a kid who's uninhibited, who's just having fun with it, who's doing these skills from when they're 10, and then you find them at 20, man, they're going to be rocketed. They're going to be on a whole different level for you to really do the research. Us older folks, we got jobs, man. Yeah. Unless your job is remote viewing or MindSight, you got other jobs and things to do. So it's hard to find the time to like train. But if you were a kid and this was, and you didn't have a job and you were living at home with your parents and you had programs and apps and things, like you said, to actually help you train and the community that supported you, sky's the limit as to what you can do, you know?
Yeah, precisely. And really that community support is once again, I think, such a critical part of moving the chess piece forward in the game, Hakeem. The idea of being able to know that there are other people out there thinking the same thing. There are other people out there wanting to move in different ways. Like I was just talking with a community of remote viewers the other day that are very young and very, very go get 'em and all about it. And it's fantastic to see that. It's great to hear that, you know, and it's one of those, how do you, outside of a traditional system, outside of anything, and even then, you know, you're dealing with, maybe a different set of targets that somebody might have interested in. You know, things like that. So, how do you bring in different target forms? How do you bring in different applications of these remote viewing technologies and methods? So, yeah.
And there's going to be vendors there, and the vendors that we're choosing are going to be people who are building apps for training these type of skills, building different devices that help you tap into deeper levels of meditation.
Awesome.
To change and shift your brain waves and help you understand, you know, your brain waves. And like, these vendors are going to be also, they're the people you want to find out about too, because their tools and their technology is going to help us explore the depths of what is real and what is not real and how deep we can go with ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's also a platform for that too. So we got multidimensional aspects to this. We got the actual game aspect. We got the community and the collaboration. We have the teaching and learning, you know, and then we also have the vendors and the people who are providing that. So,
it's absolutely awesome. And once again, as somebody who works in the world of corporate events, corporate AV, corporate audio video is what I do for a living. It's absolutely awesome. And an event on scale, for such an amazing cause, for such an amazing community, and reason, Hakeem. It's visionary and awesome. And I hope to have you on the show again and again and again to talk about not only this, but, all of your work, everything that you're doing. It's very exciting, and it's great to see, other people being invigorated by the cause of remote viewing and by the techniques of remote viewing to want to bring that to the masses and to other people.
Yeah. I thank you for that. And I'm really honored that you would say that and that you would give me an opportunity to express this, because it really is heavy on my heart. And heavy, not in a negative way, but heavy as in it's full in my heart. Let me use that word, full in my heart, where I believe in these abilities. I believe in our potential.
Yeah.
Our beautiful, great, loving, expressive, connected potential that we have with one another and with the universe as a whole. And I believe in it so much that I wanted to create this event to give people that opportunity to feel that same type of belief and know that there are others out there who want to connect with them and want to help them grow to their full potential. And in turn, help themselves grow to their full potential. And this is what the Psy Games is all about. So I hope people, you know, really realize this isn't about I'm the best and you suck. This is about, I can do something really well. I can help you do it well too. And let's work together to make sure other people can do it well. Yeah. And this is the stage where we bring them together, to the place where we bring them together to make that connection and help us all.
Yep. Yep. And once again, to learn to realize when that connection is occurring, when that connection with the world around you and that, that handshake of electrons is happening, Hakeem.
Yes.
The example that I'll give, comes from the recent remote viewing cruise. And I'll tell a quick story, cause once again, I've only had about 9 sessions of remote viewing. Before we left the cruise, the last night, Michelle Fried asked us all, there were about 6 of us there having a drink, and she was like, let's all play a game before we leave, you know, before we go to the casino, let's all quiet our minds for about 2 minutes. And the first image, when I say go, that pops into your head, say it out loud, and you're going to win big in the casino with that. You know, so we went down, the 6 of us, a few people played, won, they found their items, you know, they won money, but they kept playing and lost, did not find mine. Mine was a blue horseshoe is what I was looking for. Did not find it there. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute though. Analytic overlay. I'm actively going to Las Vegas for a week for clients. So, could be the blue horseshoe supposed to occur there. Who knows? So I go, I'm on job site with a bunch of friends that, oh no. Hold on. I'm on job site with a bunch of friends that I have known for years. And during this show, we're told, you know, that we've got new clients coming in to check out things, and hopefully we will be landing this contract with them if things work out well. So best behavior, make sure everything's great, all that kind of stuff. And as the week goes on, I'm looking for the blue horseshoe everywhere, looking for it all over. I never find it, so I never end up gambling anything. Nothing like that. And as the last night happens, we go out to crew dinner, we have a drink or two. And overnight I get a text from the show lead, and he's like, hey man, just so you know, we ended up getting things, but I wanted you to know that the client had a tattoo on her ankle of a blue horseshoe. and that just blew my mind when it happened. The fact that was there, that it actively happened, Hakeem, was absolutely wild to me. And something that I could not deny whatsoever. Mm. It was just a strange, strange thing to see. So
yeah. That's magic, man.
Hold on. I lost my headphone juice in my wireless headphones. So there we go. Now I have you back in my head, buddy.
That's funny.
All kinds of gremlins tonight. But yeah, it was fascinating.
My teacher used to always say, my Stephen K. Hayes, my ninjutsu teacher, he would say, always make room for the magic. And that always stuck for me. The things you just cannot explain. You might have an inkling that they exist or no inkling at all. And all of a sudden you have a feeling or you say something or you connect with somebody in some way and you're in awe. And it's really like, yeah, it is magic. Always make room for that magic, you know? And that's one of the things that your story is inspiring me to say right now is always make room for that magic. There's things happening and developing and on levels we can't even always comprehend. And they play out on this world or universal stage, and they play out in our lives. And we have moments every so often where we can catch a glimpse of that magic happening. Yeah. And that's what it sounds like you had in that moment.
So, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It was beautiful. And I felt a total feeling of connection when it happened. And it was overwhelming and amazing. And I can't wait. It's been very interesting because, I have since right at the beginning of that cruise had a totally different connection with the world around me. A connection that I haven't had in a long, long time, and it's really fantastic. Very comforting to have it back. So it's great. It's awesome. And it's one of those things that empowers me to come to things like the Psy Games, and share and come and talk about this stuff and come and cover it for you guys, because it's important to get word out there about events like this. It is important to share these things amongst communities, and it's important to create a community that fosters the idea of sharing, Hakeem.
Yes.
And you are doing that. It's awesome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm really elated right now. You've made me so happy to give me an opportunity to express this thing that is just, like I said, so full in my heart.
Yeah.
And I thank you so much.
Well, and I hope to have you on again and again between now and August, when the event is occurring. Let everybody know where they can go to find out more about Psy Games, where they can go to find out more about you and take ninjutsu classes like that, because that is absolutely awesome. But yeah, let everybody know all the information, where they can go to keep track of you, where they can go to find out and keep up with all the latest and greatest from Psy Games International.
Yeah, so PsyGamesInternational.com is the website. So it's PSI as in I as in India, GamesInternational.com. And there right now is a one-sheeter, so it'll explain like what the Psy Games are, what the genres are of competition, basic stuff. But as the weeks go by, we're going to be adding more and more information. Like I said, we're going to have like a list of the actual games themselves. We got a few more keynote speakers that are like, we're waiting to hear back from. And we're just growing. I mean, at a rapid pace, this thing is going to be fantastic. And so that's where you can find it. If you're looking for information about me, I actually have a new website being built, but my old website, which is my name, Hakeem, H-A-K-I-M as in Mary, dash Isler, I-S-L-E-R, .com, Hakeem-Isler.com. And you can find out, a little bit more about me, until I get my newer site that really dives into a lot of the consciousness work.
Awesome.
And multidimensional work that I've been working on, like the mind site, the remote viewing, and those different types of skills that I've been I've delved deep in for the past several years. So, and you know, me being a part of the Monroe Institute and things of that nature. So that's where you can find out about me.
Man, too cool. Such exciting stuff. I am so glad to have you on the show. And once again, I want to have you on again and again and again to talk about
Thank you so much.
Because it is so important as we move forward into a new paradigm of humanity that people understand the different facets of the beautiful universe around them and the part of it that they are. So thank you for everything that you're doing with Psy Games. Thank you for everything that you're doing with the Mind Site, with students and children and everything else. It's fantastic work. Thank you so much for your time tonight. I'll be sharing links, all that kind of stuff very, very soon. We're pretty quick on the turnaround with production. So I appreciate your time tonight, my friend.
Well, thank you so much, buddy. And Chris, I enjoy our conversation tonight.
Same.
Immensely.
Same. I'll be reaching out soon. You have a great evening. Take care and happy election night.
All right. Okay. Let's see what happens.
I wish I had a kazoo, like a little party horn and some confetti.
I'd love to see that. Make sure
that'd be class. Should have done that for the end. Take care, Hakeem. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Hakeem Isler, everybody. Absolutely awesome. I am very, very excited to see what comes from Cygames in the future. It is such an amazing concept, such a forward-looking concept when it comes to the community of remote viewing and how we bring it not only to the next generation, but how we bring it to each other as ambassadors of it, as remote viewers, as people within the remote viewing community. So great work with that. It's absolutely awesome. When we come back from this quick commercial break, everybody, we will be joined by our good friend Earl Gray Anderson, director of Southern California MUFON. We will be talking about the new Netflix docuseries, The Manhattan UFO Abduction. What it means to the community of alien abductees and experiencers out there, what movies like this, which I once again would kind of consider a hit piece to the work of Bud Hopkins and those with him that worked with him. So we're going to be talking about what these divisive wedges mean in the UFO UAP community, what they mean for the cause of disclosure, what they mean for those that are victimized by abduction and experience of the first kind or third and fourth kind to heal them, what it means to move them forward in their progress, or does it hinder them in their progress? So we will be getting into that with our good friend Earl Gray Anderson right after this, folks.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the field observation and encounter log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that quick break. And thank you so much for sticking around. Also, thank you so much to our sponsors, True Hemp Science. True Hemp Science is your source for amazing CBD products made through a spigyric process where every part of the plant is used and reused to give you the best product possible. I have used True Hemp Science for years and have found them absolutely amazing. Stop on by and check them out, folks. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to go to. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to get 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more. Our topic in this segment is the new documentary that has been released by Netflix, The Manhattan Alien Abduction, and its impact on the community. Our good friend Earl Gray is here to discuss this tonight. Welcome back to the show, Earl. This documentary that has just been released, you know, it's been hyped in a lot of ways in many communities. I heard from a lot of people just very excitedly like, oh, check it out, check it out. And when I went and watched it, I was kind of taken aback, because it very much seemed to me just off the surface to be a hit piece on Bud Hopkins and his work. It seemed to very much revolve around the idea of, I guess, the loss of faith of his ex-wife in his work throughout her involvement toward the later end of his work, and to call question into the experience of Linda Napolitano, which, you know, was, I think a pretty landmark case in the world of alien abduction. Earl.
It was, I mean, even in the film itself, it was kind of referred to as the smoking gun case. There were 30 witnesses that were involved in that case. And, you know, Bud Hopkins' ex-wife, Carol Rainey, was her name. She published a paper. It was, I don't know, it was a while ago, maybe 8 years ago or something, where it was similar to this miniseries that came out recently. It was really kind of a hit piece. And Bud was divorced from her at the time. And it kind of felt like, I mean, it's weird. She actually co-authored a book with Bud that I thought was pretty good. That's the one. And but then they had had marriage problems and that marriage fell apart. And reading Carol's original paper, that seemed like a hit piece to me. It seemed like the woman had a grudge that she kind of wanted to get back at her ex-husband, who wasn't alive to defend himself, by the way, not even then when her paper came out, when she published this article, he was gone. There was, you know, she was really criticizing somebody that couldn't defend himself.
Yeah.
And strangely, this miniseries, it took her point of view. Apparently, she filmed all of her parts. Now, she is deceased as well. She passed away, I think, last year, maybe. It was fairly recently. And but apparently, what I have heard from both Linda and from Peter Robbins, who was actually a very good film. I mean, Peter is, you know, Peter, he's an eloquent man. He stuck to the points and his parts were good. They were brought into this film not knowing that Carol Rainey was, that it was taking her point of view, that it was technically a hit piece against Bud work. And when they saw that, when Linda saw it, she was surprised and horrified. She was horrified. This is a sort of thing that, you know, I'm very, very attuned to and careful with witnesses' identities, with their information, even cities that they may live in. I will insist if I write about an experience or case, I will always use a pseudonym, or I'll just refer to the person as the witness, because there's a lot of ridicule out there, as probably most people know. You know, it's one thing saying that you've seen a UFO. It's a whole thing, a whole different thing saying that you've met those that are flying the UFOs, and that you to say that you've been taken to a craft. You know, there's ridicule. I mean, you know, we've all seen the Saturday Night Live skits that are kind of on that.
Which are lampooned off of her videos.
Mm-hmm.
Like those are lampooned off of Linda.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It's like the New York case.
Yes. And you know, it's been in the news over the last many days. I just had the articles up, but here's a list of articles about Napolitano suing Netflix over this, over literal misrepresentation. I had somebody, there was somebody in one of the groups that I belong to on social media yesterday talking about, and just so you know, folks, this is recorded today, Tuesday the 5th. Of November on election day. So this is fresh. This is real. This didn't happen a week ago. Me and Earl talking about this. The lawsuits, just hit on the 4th. The actual press release about that, just came out yesterday. So it's interesting to see. And somebody was like, you know, this is a frivolous lawsuit. They'll never win anything. And it's like, I wouldn't go that far if there was misrepresentation as to what this documentary was, what the angle of it was, what the slant of it was, you are darn tootin' that there is a case to be made there, because you have basically coerced people into being in something that they thought was in support of them, what they do, and what their experience was, and it is not, you know, and it is made to make somebody look in a total different light, and made to make Bud Hopkins' work look in a total different light, which by default makes the work of anybody related with Bud Hopkins be looked at in a totally different light. So yeah, I think that it's one of those situations where, yes, like you said, I think a well-made film, production-wise, things like that, as somebody who works with cameras, lenses, lighting, that kind of stuff, it was beautifully done. But journalistically done?
No.
I don't think so. Not in that kind of way.
It was a hit piece. Watching it, I was warned before I watched it. One of my local field investigators had watched it before I did and said, well, you should probably watch this. I'd like your take on it. And, it starts out like it's going to be a documentary, yeah, and that isn't really taking sides. But about maybe halfway through, not even that far through,
no,
I started realizing that what it was, and I thought that the way it was, Linda herself had complaints about the way that she was portrayed, the way that she was filmed, that they didn't do proper makeup on her. The lighting was always done kind of in a dark way for her. Mm. Except for the archived footage that they use, the stuff, yeah, where she control over how she would be dressed and what she would look like on camera, the archived stuff was all great. You know, it was Linda, but somebody I think that was more used to being in front of a camera, more used to being on television, probably would have questioned, well, how come you guys want me to just be in my sweats, you know, and how come you're not doing, you know, makeup? This is a major feature, right? I mean, aren't you supposed to do that? But somebody that, you know, Linda doesn't make her living doing television programs and stuff. You know, back in the day she did, you know, she was on talk shows and stuff. But it's been a while. And I thought that the way they portrayed her was unfair. It was she was portrayed in a way to draw question to her veracity.
Yeah.
Her motives. And it was just very, anybody that has a background in the biz,
yeah,
you know, you can see what they were doing.
Well,
and it wasn't fair. It wasn't fair.
Well, and let's explore the experiencer side and the abductee side of this real quick, Earl, because you are part of the experiencer resource team for MUFON. And you've talked to tons of experiencers, taken tons of statements from them, spent tons of one-on-one time for people. And I am a big fan of the work of the ERT. I'm a huge fan of the work of Kathleen Martin. And the idea that, documentaries like this, like you're saying, that paint the experiencer and paint the abductee in such a way, can make it very hard. We are just burgeoning on the world of openness when it comes to abduction and experience in the world of UFO UAP. I'm not going to say it's like the hot ticket, you know, because I'm not going to say it's ever been the hot ticket to be an abductee. And I think that's something that, now granted, there are surely people who want attention. There are certainly people who want long-term attention. However, when you're talking people like Linda, who expressed things like PTSD after her experience, it's a different realm. And you have to be able to accept somebody for the experience that they've had, until proven otherwise. And granted, there I guess was some evidence at one point regarding handwriting, things like that, with some letters, what have you. But to say out of pocket and out of hand that her experience was done to garner fame, to garner attention, anything like that, it wasn't the day and age like it is now, where you could probably make it famous by being in a documentary about it, you know?
Well, there's ridicule involved.
Yeah. Oh, you know? Tons.
And what really concerns me about films like this one, or miniseries, I think of it as a film because it is three parts and it's obviously connected.
Yeah, docuseries.
Is that it's going to make people think twice before coming forward, putting in a case about their to MUFON or another organization that does this. It's that ridicule factor, and again, these people have PTSD, ontological shock is the correct psychological term, which is a form of PTSD. Whether they've had a good experience or a horrifying experience, most people are shocked and horrified because you have to throw away the playbook of life.
That's
you have to rethink everything. Your sense of reality is challenged and changed. And I'm just afraid that films like this, that it's just going to make it harder for experience to be honest and tell their own stories, you know.
Well, and that's kind of the point of what I was saying, to exactly the point of what I was saying, Earl, is the idea that it will make people more reticent to come forward with an experience. And could it be much like the last time we had you on? Last time we had you on, we were talking about Kathleen Martin. We had Kathleen Martin on as well, responding to Dr. Stephen Greer's recent statements about the Betty and Barney Hill case being a MyLab incident, you know, a case of military abduction and implantation of a memory. And oddly enough, he made that case about Perez de Cuellar years ago, that Perez de Cuellar's experience was a MyLab abduction, and that there was going to be a huge UN outpouring and disclosure movement that was going on, that Perez was helping head up, and that he was MyLabbed, he was militarily abducted, and the experience that he had and claimed to have was implanted in him, you know? He was a big part of this case. He was a huge part of this case.
Yes, he was.
Because he was one of the many witnesses where it's like, that is almost what they would call in court an impeachable witness, you know, somebody whose provenance is so large, and so there, that because he was Inspector General of the UN at the time, you know, so for the Inspector General of the UN to make a UFO report, to say that they saw an alien abductee hovering in a beam of light over an apartment building, outside the 12th floor of an apartment building in New York City, you know, that his car stopped working and that he witnessed this.
Yeah.
That's a big statement, you know? Oddly enough, Dr. Greer said that also was a MyLab case.
Well, there's a lot of people that don't want this aspect of the phenomenon to be accepted or even known about out there. It's okay for them to ridicule it, apparently, or question to this phenomena or this part of the phenomenon. But I, for instance, people are talking about, you know, big D disclosure, and are we going to get that? And we might. Okay, we may actually get some government based disclosure this year. We'll see. You know, I'll believe it when I see it.
That is an utter political setup on election night there, bud.
I know. But they're going to disclose the experience or phenomena. That's something yes. that they do not want to talk about.
No.
And one has to wonder, I mean, was there actually a contract signed by Truman and our visitors that, you know, in exchange for technology, you can, you know, catch and release this certain amount of people? Of course, we don't know, but there's so many rumors out there, and especially in ufology.
Well, that is something to address.
Mm-hmm.
The rumor aspect, the aspect of even right now with what's going on with Lou Elizondo and the picture kerfuffle in his current presentation, you know.
And he questioned the picture. It was just one among many.
That came to him from what he knew was a vetted source.
Yeah.
You know, you have to even wonder, even in the intelligence community, even when something comes into the Pentagon from a vetted source, how do we know that vetted source, now that they're vetted and been giving good information for so long, hadn't just kind of tossed something in there just to provide something whenever you ask, you know, just to keep up with the quota, you know, like, oh, they asked for something. Here's something. There you go, bud. You know, they haven't vetted and looked at. Now you have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think that any of that is random. It was probably very intentionally done to draw a question to Lou and you know, maybe it's more than coincidence that we're seeing this sort of stuff, you know, both from Stephen Greer and now this documentary drawing question to this aspect of the phenomenon. Like, I guess it's okay that there's such a thing as UFOs, but God forbid if we talk about the pilots of those and you know, motives and why they're here, et cetera. And to me, that's interesting. I love hot rods as much as the next person, but I'm interested in who's coming here and why, I'll always say the experience or phenomena is really the heart of ufology, for me at least. I like nuts and bolts stuff as much as the next person. If you look at my case files, I have just as more nuts and bolts cases than I do probably experiencer cases that I've investigated for MUFON.
Yeah.
But I love experiencer cases because those are the personal ones. It's contact. It's where you get conversation with those that are visiting us. And maybe it's too close to the bone for certain elements of government and maybe society as well. It makes people uncomfortable, sure.
Well, and that's just it. It does make people uncomfortable. It makes people very uncomfortable, Earl, when you start talk, because it's one thing to talk about something in the sky. It's one thing to have the conversation about government panels and things like that, and funding, even, you know, even the idea, because I've had the conversation with my father. My father's an older gentleman, and he holds no water. None of this holds any water for him. It's foolishness, you know. And like I've explained, I had a very blunt conversation with him after the Grush testimony that he watched. And I was like, oh, watch the testimony. He's like, oh, are you talking about little green men and everything? What are you talking about? And I'm like, okay, here's the thing. He's talking about a ton of money that once tracked down, people were like, no, we're not going to tell you what we spend the money on. So regardless, there's billions and billions of dollars that have been used for these programs that you don't know what they've been used for, and you're okay with that. You know? So look at it. It's kind of like owning a McDonald's for 20 years and finding out your dude at the front counter has been stuffing money in his pocket, but it's all right. Johnny does a great job. You know, he keeps that milkshake machine running every week. You know, like, so you don't have to believe in little green men for it to be an important thing. And the frightening kind of thing, Earl, with this being election night, is that much like we say with targeted individual legislation, things like that, yes, disclosure, capital D disclosure, will only come through a political means. It will only come through cutting off the funding to the contractors whose programs handle these things. You know, which means tying the purse strings, removing it from the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, things like that. You know, so yes, sadly, folks, it is only through a political means that we are going to get this kind of disclosure that we're looking for. And if we don't have experiencers with which to talk about these horrible parts that, you know, okay, maybe I'm comfortable talking about a disclosure panel in the Senate, but I'm not comfortable talking about people being taken, people being experimented on, people having fetuses implanted in them and taken from them, like our guest from last week, Karen Wilkinson, you know, things like that, Earl, that I would love to say are a mass hallucination by people, but, odds on favorite, and research has pointed to the fact that it is not.
I mean, look at the ridicule that, for instance, Dr. John Mack was put through.
Yeah.
You know, Harvard, I mean, they kept moving him into smaller offices and they're trying to get him fired off the staff. He was the head of psychiatry at Harvard, you know.
Yeah.
Finally, they backed off from him, but not after doing a lot of damage. And, you know, and I think that it's just that this aspect to phenomenology makes people uncomfortable because it happened to them. And it's, you know, I will often tell my new field investigators, just be aware that when you poke at the phenomenon, be aware that it can poke back.
Yeah.
You're it's not just a one-way thing going on. You know, it's not like looking at a germ on a slide and there's this protection for you, you know, while you're looking at it from this distance. No, you know, you poke at it, it's interactive. And so we have to understand this aspect to ufology, and as uncomfortable as it makes people feel. And I know that there was an attitude out there at one time, and I was trained this way, that if somebody says they were abducted or visited by ETs, that you want to put them under the floodlights and try to trip them up, you know, get them on video camera and watch every expression, watch which way their eyes are going, you know, and that's just adding insult to injury. And that's really what this documentary does, is it adds insult to injury in this situation. And, you know, it's the nastiness in it, like the way that, now we know that this phenomenon is generational. We all know that. Yeah. We see it. We see, you know, I look for marker case to case. And more times than not, somebody isn't just abducted or visited out of the blue. You find out that the parent was a mucky muck in the Air Force or worked on secret, you know, SAPs, you know, programs that were black budget stuff for the military. And it is a generational thing. And Linda's son was beginning to have visits and acted like in this documentary, like Linda was leading her son on to believe that and promoting a lie to him. And I've seen people do that. Okay. I've seen people do that to others. And I mean, I have one case where the gentleman is an abductee, although he doesn't like that term. He's, you know, come to peace with his experiences, but it started when he was a child. He finally met his birth family that lived in South America and found out that his dad had gone through the exact same thing. And it was a generational thing. And his father, they actually put him into a mental institution. That's the way that they treated it way back when.
Yeah.
In you know, in the South American country that he was from. But now he's got concern about his daughter, and that is a real concern. You know, this guy, and we're talking about somebody, this gentleman actually, I can't mention names, I can't mention places, because he only if he comes out on his own.
Absolutely.
But this guy's a TSA agent and quite high up in Homeland Security. So you have to listen to somebody like that. Now, if the wrong person was talking to him and he talked about his concern for his daughter, they treated it like this Netflix thing did Linda and her son. It's just dirty pool. And that's, coming to a conclusion that is actually, I mean, I can understand why who's angry at the film and that is bringing this lawsuit against the film, the producers of it. I can understand where they're coming from and how they feel. And I'm all for them. I hope they're successful. Maybe it'll make somebody in the future think twice before doing a complete hit job like this.
Yeah, precisely. And you know, when you're talking about what amounts to an attack on somebody's life work, especially somebody who in the field of ufology, Bud Hopkins was really forefront when it came to bringing abductees together and having them share experience together.
That was his idea, the support that we see now, that I've been to them, and they're wonderful for people that have had contact and meeting others. It normalizes it for them, because I'll tell you, I've heard from so many people, why me? And am I the only person this has happened to? That's the way, people out there know my history by now, probably, that I haven't experienced myself. And I was told to keep it to myself. I was told you should, not talk about this in public, for God's sake. Never talk about it on a podcast or media. You'll bring ridicule to yourself and the organization, et cetera. And so I know how that feels.
Yep.
And Kathleen was instrumental in helping me get past that speed bump of ontological shock. I experienced it. I know what it's like. It feels like, my God, before this was a question mark, now it's a reality. Now it's not, I want to believe, it's like, I know. And how do I deal with this? And are they going to come again? And is my family safe? Et cetera. It ticks off all those boxes for you. And the last thing a person needs is to be treated like a criminal under lights and try to figure out motivations. And did they twitch their cheek just now when they were asked this question? This is a stuff that does nobody any favors. And it's probably coming from folks that wish that this aspect to the phenomenon didn't exist. But it's probably why they're here, folks. I don't think it's just like a walk in the park. They decided to come here like we'd go spend a day in the zoo. There's interaction going on. And, I people have different ideas about the motives. For me, I think that we're probably being retooled into a less warlike society, that perhaps we're considered a risk to the rest of the universe. If you look at the way that what we do to each other, imagine if the other looked like bugs or something, how would we treat them, And that's probably a concern out there. So maybe we are, having our DNA tooled with that, we would be a little less quick to push the button, things like that. But it's an important question, and the last thing that it needs is to have this this rag of ridicule pulled over it, and to make fun of the witnesses in the way that I felt this documentary did with Linda, who I've known for years. I've known Linda at least, I guess, 9 years ago. I've not met her in person, but I know her on social media and have talked with her quite a bit. Bud Hopkins' old assistant, Peter Robbins, is a real world friend of mine.
Same.
I can't think of anybody that I respect more than Peter.
Yeah, I like you, Earl, but I don't know of anybody in this field with more integrity than Peter Robbins.
Oh yeah,
you know, he approaches everything with such an open and proper scientific mind. He approaches everything with such a balanced view.
Yes.
On things, such a grounded view on things, and to make it so that because he also hosts a show as well, you know, and it's one of those as that grows and things like that. It's like it's interesting to me once again to see how these things are injected and the long term repercussive waves that happen. Where yes, once again. Now that brings Peter's work into question, and it shouldn't, because his work stands alone and it's amazing. And you know,
ethics are impeccable.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, a good example is the book, you know, Left at Eastgate. I mean, it turned out that the co-author he had was actually, exaggerating certain parts of his case, and Peter wasn't having it, and he actually took that book off the market. That was, you know, Peter's rent, more or less. Yeah. Right there. That's how he pays his bills, you know, as an author.
That's right.
But his integrity is such that he took that book off the market, and that's the kind of person that we're talking about. If it was anybody else, other than Peter, it may have destroyed their career, but everybody knows the motives and how, you know, the veracity of Peter Robbins is impeccable. So in this film, you know, if you take the premise the producer forward, it was that Peter was like, you know, an assistant to a fraud.
Yeah.
And it's very, very unfair, first of all, because Bud Hopkins is not here to defend himself.
Yeah.
Peter is. And Peter is doing just that right now.
Yeah.
He is defending himself. He's defending Linda. And he's also he's defending Bud Hopkins' beautiful and important career, who is a pioneer in this field.
Yeah.
And. Yeah, definitely the last person that you would think somebody would do this to. But, you know, there you go.
Well, and you know, once again, when you start looking at the way that these things divide a community, the way that a community reacts to these things, it can be very volatile. It can change things drastically, and it can change the dialogue drastically. And once again, to know that things like this may prevent other people from coming forward with their story, may prevent, right as we are quite literally creating federal means by which for people to come through with their stories, with their experiences, you know, kind of one of the things I talk about regularly on the show. You may be saying like, well, you know, MUFON is all about nuts and bolts. They aren't about you know, alien abduction experiences, things like that. Well, yes, there is the ERT, but aside from that, feel free to take a look at the scientific method and note that it begins with observation and experience. So whether you like it or not, whether you have jumped on the science train after seeing something in the sky or having something land in your back field or being taken aboard a craft, whether or not you take the ticket to the science train, you're already on it, Jack. Science has already started and you're a part of it, whether you like it or not.
Yep.
You know, the question is, do you gather more data? That's the next part. Do you gather more data on the topic at hand? And then do you form a hypothesis from the data gathered in the experience? You know, that's how you move forward in science, but it starts with experience. So yes, we have to take every experiencer at their word prima facie until, you know, it goes through peer reviewed testing and things like that, you know, no different than scientific data in a lab. But if a scientist, and this has been seen very recently, you know, where it's like, we achieved room temperature semiconduction. Announce it. There it is. And it was out there. It's still out there right now. And it's still being peer reviewed and still being peer reviewed again and still being peer reviewed again, you know. But twice now they have made the announcement that there has been room temperature semiconductor made. And that's like twice within the last year and a half. So we kind of have to take those scientists at their word until science is repeated. The same anomaly is probed and poked in a lab and see if we get the results. We said the same thing about, like, we'll never have, you know, stable fusion. Or stable fission. We'll never have a fission reactor. We just found out mayonnaise helps the process along nicely, you know? But it starts with somebody's experience and somebody's wild idea about said experience, Earl.
Yeah.
That's science. So, yeah, we have to listen to experiencers. We have to listen to abductees. And then may it be the fact that, much like most photographs turned in to the MUFON reporting team or to the MUFON analysis team, most videos, that 95 to 97% of them are explained. Absolutely. Probably even the same with alien abduction, you know, and alien experience.
The people have screen memories that they're given. Yeah. And we don't even really know if the little gray guys with the black eyes that everybody sees is the way that they look. It could be an avatar.
Could be an analytic overlay of what you're comfortable with.
Yeah, exactly. It's, right? Two arms, legs, a trunk, and a head. They may think that this is going to be more comforting to us than, you know, maybe they look like octopoids or something. We simply don't know. But the way we find out and the way that we come to these hypotheses that we have is through speaking to multiple witnesses.
That's right.
It's not like an experiment. An experimental animal or something like that. You have to remember that there are feelings involved, there are emotions involved, that these are lives and that the way that we treat these people, it matters. And this film just does a disservice because it draws question to all, you know, abduction and visitation cases. I mean, it's the film is number 10 on Netflix right now.
Yeah.
You know, my in-laws are probably going to watch this, and, you know, they know what I do. And I'm sure they've seen me on Ancient Aliens talking about my own experience. You know, it's out there. And so far, you know, everybody's treated me with a lot of respect and belief and understanding.
Yeah.
But you have to figure that there's a lot of people out there that it's going to sully their view of the entire phenomenon. It's just one more rock being thrown at phenomenology and
a big one.
Yeah, it's a big one.
It's a big one. You know,
There's a difference between this and, you know, the cult movies and stuff like that. You know, my wife likes to watch the cult movies.
I watch quite a few of them. I watch quite a few docuseries about that. And I mean, even whenever I recently did the archiving project for the Hayden Hughes archive, I archived almost 40 hours of news footage on Heaven's Gate.
Yeah, oh, yikes. Yeah.
Like was some thick stuff to have in the background of your head for 40 hours straight.
Oh, I know. Peter actually met the guy that was his name. he came out to a book signing that Peter was doing, and he said that the guy walked up to the signing table and that it just, the room got cold, that he could tell there was something wrong with that guy.
Wow.
But this throws the whole, that's the problem. It throws that whole element of phenomenology into that realm of question. And it's already difficult enough for these people.
Yeah.
And it's a big step backwards to question the good work of Bud Hopkins. And it does not really give you the proper background. I mean, this was his ex-wife that was coming after him posthumously. He could not defend himself. She literally apparently stole documents from his files, which weren't even hers.
Wow.
And of course, you know, even Kathleen Martin, she brought this up the other day, that they had the question about the one ambassador from South America, that and where she had the handwriting analyst, and that his signature was exactly the same that it was on another document. But I think Carol Rainey was probably smart enough to know that that, yes, an ambassador will have their signature on a stamp, a rubber stamp, and the secretary is going to stamp that over on the letters.
Yeah. And like I said, a mimeograph machine as well is pretty common, where it just repeats your signature over and over and over. That's what it's programmed to do.
Yes.
You know.
So, you know, I mean, the arguments that are made in the film are not good ones. And so then you have to just figure, well, what's left here? Why did this happen at all? To me, I believe that it was just a woman who felt spurned by her ex, and she wanted to get even with him. And this was the best way to do it. She had a chip on her shoulder, and this was her means of exercising that particular demon.
Yeah.
But boy, number 10 on Netflix. I mean, a lot of people are watching it. So
it's up there. Like I said, I've had quite a few people that I know that are not in the community contact me, because they know I am. They know that this is one of my things that I'm just wicked into. And they're like, oh my God, have you seen this documentary? And I'm like, oh my God, yes, I have. I'm not a huge fan.
No.
Beautifully shot. Amazingly produced. The content is spurious. It's the approach of it. And once again, the fact of, I don't think that Linda Napolitano would have agreed to do it knowing the twist with which things were going to be done. I know Peter Robbins wouldn't have.
No.
You know?
They would have touched this project. They would not have touched it.
Yeah.
But these guys went there, and they're going to, I believe that Peter and Linda are going to be successful with their suit. So there you go. I hope so.
I hope so too. I hope so too, because it is one of those, not just posthumously seeking justice for Bud Hopkins and his work, but the idea of making sure that the door of conversation is left open.
Yes.
For those that do experience, for those that are victims of abduction without consent. It's such an important topic. It's such an important part. And I think really and honestly a huge key leverage piece when it comes to the big D disclosure of things, Earl. You know, because ultimately it comes down to the fact of even the prime example would be human trafficking and human trafficking laws. And the fact of, people have talked about human trafficking for decades. They've talked about it. It took until the last 7 years for laws to hit, for there to be a criminal definition of human trafficking made, and for there to be laws and legislations passed for it. Now, when something comes up, like what's happening in the news with the Diddy and that kind of stuff, once again, because that's a cause of my show, people ask, like, what do you think about it? And I'm like, whether he's innocent or not, I don't know. but it's such a drastic charge that is so new in the legal system. That has major implications. So they do not bring that without a whole lot of evidence.
Yes.
So if he's being charged with it, that's a rough row for him to hoe, because more than likely he's going to be found guilty. Because that's just the way that charge works and the evidence involved to even get that charge on the books, you know? The fact that legal things have to go through that, and we're looking at that with disclosure. And if we don't get to a point of seeing the actual human impact, we can talk national defense all day. But until we see the actual human impact, the impact that it has on humanity, you don't move legislature.
No.
You don't move legislators until you see that. You know, until that was proven, until that was seen, until the impacts of it were seen globally in other countries, and they started passing laws against it, and the UN started passing legislation against it, then we moved. You know, but it took a lot of doing for that to happen. And it's going to take a lot of doing for disclosure to happen. And if you close the door in the conversation on abduction and abduction cases and experiencers and experiencer cases, you're literally cutting off science at the pass, because you're chopping it at the first leg of it.
That's right. That's what I absolutely in agreement with you, Chris. So, you know.
Yeah.
that was quite a conversation, though. Ooh. We ended up on P. Diddy, you know?
P. Diddy and legislation on election night. No,
yeah,
less. But
yeah, they need me to vote to do
that's
this,
right. But. That's right, and that's just it. You know, if you want a message to go out on, folks, it's get out there. It's get out there and vote, because you know, your senators that you vote for, your representatives that you vote for, they are the people that make these decisions. They are the people that start and sit on these committees, you know. So if they are somebody that is empathetic to this cause, if they are somebody who, you know, is willing to attend a conference, I would extend that. You know, if you are having a conference of this ilk in your area, reach out to your local assemblyman. Give them a free pass.
Heck yeah.
Give your local, you know, your local senator seat a free ticket to the conference to come see things and come hear experiencers and things like that. You know, because finding those empathetic ears is very, very important.
The beauty is, this is like the only issue that Congress people are reaching across the aisle on, you know, that seems like, you know, maybe the only issue, but there's seems like an equal interest on both sides of the aisle. And that gives me hope. Maybe
exactly.
We can stop throwing rocks at each other.
And stop with hit pieces like this that seem amazing to put out and produce, but are literally setting wildfires within communities and driving wedges inside of them of division and divisiveness and sowing seeds of discord amongst things. So, thank you so much for taking the time to come on quite literally like 24-hour notice when. When I saw lawsuits coming down the pipe and things like that, I sprung into action. And to see that this is where we're at with it, that you know, we have numerous articles out there about lawsuits over the last many days with it. So good luck to those guys. I wish them luck. I stand with them. I stand with the estate of Bud Hopkins and with Bud and his work. I know a lot of people have cast aspersion on his work in the past, even aspersion on some of his methodology with things. But I think the overwhelming body of work and what it represents shows otherwise once you start looking at it.
He had to find his own paths because they did not exist in phenomenal. Had to forge his own course, And somebody that I look up to very, very much. And to see his name sullied in any way like this for profit. I mean, who does this film help? I mean, the Carol Rainey is no longer with us, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it just really the only thing it's going to do is harm people that are still here and be a financial windfall for the producers of this bit of prophetic ridicule.
Yeah, because I don't know. I don't know the producers personally, but it doesn't seem as though they are somebody, I guess, hugely involved within the community, or that empathetic to the community. Because once again, to basically hoist an experiencer on a petard such as this. And to represent them in such a way, so pointedly is very hard and very, I think, misunderstood.
Yeah.
So, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and talk about this on such short notice. I think it was one of those that, much like the claims I said at the beginning with Dr. Greer and Betty and Barney Hill, it was something that I felt like needed to be addressed in real time, not something like, let's look at things in a month or so. It needed to happen on the beat as things happened, because it's something that if we don't head it off at the pass, if we don't head off future things like this in the past, so much work can be so undone so rapidly, Earl.
That's right.
So before
you asked me, Chris, because, you know, this is a near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, absolutely. And I knew that. And that is one of the reasons, as well as the fact of you are hands down one of the best researchers in the field that I know. And I love your work. I love what you do. I love what you do with SoCal MUFON, and especially with your show. Before we let you go, let's get into a little bit of shameless self-promotion. Let everybody know where they can go to find your show. Let everybody know where they can go to get a hold of SoCal MUFON, where they can go to make their report in the Southern California area and beyond. Earl?
Love to. In Southern California, if you live here and you've seen a UFO, you can go to SoCal MUFON, SoCalMUFON.com. And that's our local website. And it does have there is a spot on our front page where you can click and report a UFO, but it'll take you to the main MUFON page, which is MUFON.com. Yeah. And if you've had either, and it doesn't matter, we're a worldwide organization. If you've seen a UFO, or if you have been abducted, or you know, have had interaction with a non-human entity, there's a button for that as well. You can click on report a UFO, or click on report an abduction or an entity. You can do both. So there you go. And as far as myself, I'm Earl Gray Anderson. You can find me as Earl Gray on Facebook. I'm Earl Gray Anderson on Twitter/X, whatever you call it now. I'm on LinkedIn and other. I think that's about it. I have a page. I don't keep updated well enough.
I can appreciate that. Well, man, thank you so much once again for the time. I greatly appreciate it. Take care of yourself, bud. All right. Hold the line real quick while we close things out. While you are online checking out everything from Earl Gray and SoCal MUFON at SoCalMUFON.com, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That is where you can also find our knowledge vault full of declassified government documents, court documents, all kinds of things. Stop on by and check that out, folks. Also, make sure to stop on by Curious Research. That is our new endeavor to help paranormal and UFO UAP cryptid researchers begin to prepare their data to shake hands for science. That is where you can get your copy of the Field Observation and Encounter Log. So remember, everybody, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. It takes a whole world of open minds and open hearts to change the world. And without that, we don't have conversation. Without the conversation, humanity doesn't march forward. So remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media and Aftermath Media family of podcasts. For more great shows and members-only content, visit aftermath.media today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious, and remember, the other side is always watching.